From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. House Democrats didn't get enough votes to override the president's veto of a children's health insurance program, and the question of race and intelligence hits the headlines again. For more, we have got Marcus Mabry, the international business editor for The New York Times, Katie Reckdahl, a contributing reporter to the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and ABC correspondent Ron Claiborne. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
So a quick tour on this congressional vote. Democrats voted to expand a program known as SCHIP. It's the state children's health insurance program to 10 more children. The president vetoed that bill earlier this month on the grounds it would add people to the federal rolls who could afford private insurance. The House tried to override the veto, and they failed. Now, Marcus, how is the media covering this? As a heartless president, feckless Democrats, both or neither?
Well, you know, usually the media, especially the Washington Press Corps, I think, covers things as winners and losers. And I think the media mostly, for the most part, is covering this story, the mainstream, quote-unquote, media, as an example of the continuing Democratic political impotence. They are the losers here. Even though they control both houses of Congress, it's President Bush who's emerged victorious. And that's been happening an awful lot lately for a president who is in the depths of unpopularity. But, of course, the only people more unpopular than him is the Congress. And he's actually exploiting that so far to death political effect.
So, Katie, again, this is something 10 million more children could have been added to the rolls, at least potentially. Is this an issue that America cares enough about to keep it in the headlines?
Well, I can speak for New Orleans. People in New Orleans care about this in a very large way. We have such a high rate of uninsured people here because it's a working poor economy that depends on the tourist industry largely here in New Orleans. We have so many working poor uninsured people, and yet the state of Louisiana, its program called LCHIP, which is the version of SCHIP here, has really outdone itself in enrolling uninsured kids. It has we have 8% uninsured, at least before the storm, compared to a national average of 11%. Louisiana just never outperforms any other state, and we are in enrolling kids in health insurance, and that's because state officials have found it to be more effective, more cost-effective, actually, to enroll kids in Medicaid and get that federal money into here to pay for health care in New Orleans. The recovery of New Orleans really depends on being able to have those kids go to doctors.
Ron, this SCHIP expansion would have gotten its funds from a cigarette tax hike increase to a dollar a pack from 39 cents. What about that issue, somewhat separate and aside? Does America have the willingness to increase cigarette taxes, which, according to some studies, have been shown to decrease youth smoking?
Apparently not. It does seem strange. I think Americans have a philosophical problem, or at least many do, with tax increases. But one would think that a tax on cigarettes, with all of its destructive qualities, would have support among the American public. And by the way, I should note that when you look at polls on the SCHIP program, the overwhelming majority of Americans, including Republicans, favor expanding that program. So while the president has won a victory, I'm not so sure the Republicans in the long run win a victory here. My understanding is that there are quite a few Republicans in Congress who are worried about the repercussions for them and their party by not getting this passed.
And I think Ron's exactly right. I think this will be an issue in 2008. And so far, the Democrats are actually threatening to send this bill, to tweak with it, and then send it once again to the president. If he chooses to veto it again, they're threatening to wait until right before the 2008 presidential election to send it to him a third time, which, of course, you know, I think this is, again, the political dilemma that Democrats find themselves in. If they were to do that, then, of course, the White House would say, oh, they're playing politics.
Well, exactly. The issue now for the Democrats, I would think, is do you compromise and get something passed or make an issue of this and dig in?
Just something else that connects to this in a way. You're talking about the Republicans and the Democrats. A lot of Republican lawmakers in Congress are saying that they're going to step down, end their terms, or are vulnerable. Could this add to that mix? Katie or Ron, whoever.
Yeah, I think it could add to that mix. I think people really feel strongly about about protecting children and children's health. And so I think maybe the Republicans are misreading the way the wind is blowing here. But I also feel like one of the issues that people are that the Republicans and opponents of this bill have, it seems like when I talk to people down here, there's a misunderstanding about Medicaid in general, and there's an exploiting of that. In Louisiana, most adults don't qualify for traditional Medicaid, and I think that there is a confusion about it, that in the general public, and as a result, I think that that makes this issue hard to define for an electorate.
Ron, I actually want to ask you a different question on politics. Mm-hmm. He is the first black governor of Massachusetts, and he wants to paint the White House black, or at least help Barack Obama take over the Oval Office. That's Governor Deval Patrick endorsing Senator Obama this week. Now, he was President Bill Clinton's assistant attorney general for civil rights. So is this a surprise or even a betrayal?
I don't know if it's a betrayal. I guess the really salient question is this going to make any difference? Barack Obama is struggling right now, and with or without Deval Patrick's endorsement, he's got a tough road ahead. I'm not sure Deval Patrick will swing many votes maybe outside of Massachusetts, and Massachusetts votes, I believe, in the first week in March. And one way or the other, I think this nomination will be settled before Massachusetts votes. And right now it looks like Hillary Clinton.
Marcus, how important is this, if at all?
Well, you know, I think it's important for the atmospherics, and as we see, you know, African Americans coming out for Barack Obama, from Deval Patrick to, of course, Oprah Winfrey. I think that Obama campaign hopes is that it will at least increase the African American enthusiasm for his candidacy, so that black people will support him overwhelmingly in the primaries, which is what, of course, he needs. But Ron's right. Right now, he's been one of the greatest disappointments so far in this long run toward the White House for 08. He has not capitalized on his early popularity or enthusiasm.
Katie, what do you think about his long-term prospects?
You know, people really like Barack Obama, but I think there's a practical sensibility that maybe Hillary Clinton is the horse to run with in the long run here.
Another bit of news. James Watson used to be famous as the co-discoverer of the double helix, DNA. He's currently notorious for his comments that black intelligence is not equal to whites. His comments in the London Sunday Times magazine set off a firestorm of controversy. Now, this 79-year-old Nobel Prize-winning scientist has apologized, claiming that his remarks were misunderstood. Katie, is this story playing big in the U.S.? It's been huge in the U.K.
You know, it really hasn't played. As far as I can tell, I've barely heard about it. It is one of those things that you'd think would get bigger press here. It's just been a blip on the radar screen.
Now, Ron, Watson was due to speak at London Science Museum, but they canceled his speech because they said he has gone beyond the point of acceptable debate. As journalists, we debate a lot of things. When you make a decision, for example, about covering a story like this, do you look at this whole question of acceptable debate, whether or not it's news or whether or not it's something that should pass?
You know, in this case, I'm not sure what the news value as news is in this gentleman's comments. I mean, they're pretty outrageous. You mentioned that he said that blacks weren't as intelligent as whites, but he went well beyond that, as I recall, and has made some pretty incendiary comments in the past. I'm not advocating censoring anyone. But, you know, you have to be careful when you give a platform on this subject to someone espousing these kinds of views, which are pretty far out.
Now, Marcus, there's been a lot of debate in this country over race and intelligence, and it's played out in different ways. I think the biggest case most recently, and it wasn't that recent, was Charles Murray and the Bell Curve talking about affirmative action and aptitude. These comments may be really out of the ballpark in terms of credibility. But what about the larger debates that they inspire and the undercurrents in American society in discussing these issues?
Well, you know, I think it's important to get them out there. I think, you know, this is not just some crackpot. This is, you know, Watson of the famous pair Watson and Crick. And maybe it has not gotten more attention in the U.S. because most of us don't know who they are. But as you said, Farai, this is the pair that discovered the basic makeup, how DNA, what DNA is and how it works of all living things. This is, you know, when it comes to genetics, these guys are the biggest. They are the Einsteins of genetics. There's no one bigger. And so the fact that he would say this and would have these abhorrent views is important. And I think it actually brings to light and brings to the fore something that I think many Americans, as well as Brits and people all over the world, I think many white people, and I think unfortunately many African American and other black peoples as well, this sense that they have that we are somehow as a people less intelligent. And this is something that I think is unspoken in our schools, in our classrooms, in our universities, and it makes a great difference, I think, in the expectations placed on black children at the earliest levels. And I think it has a self-fulfilling prophecy, and we need to talk about it. We cannot ignore this because we ignore it at our peril, because this frame of mind is operating every day in our lives, and it is having a deleterious effect.
Did Watson make these comments in the context of his scientific background or his personal feelings or beliefs or conclusions he's reached?
Well, he's looking not only from a scientific background but also from this idea of how much have people of African descent achieved. We've only got a little time. What do you think about that, Ron?
Well, he also went on to say something to the effect of any white person who's ever employed a black person knows that there are problems with those people. I mean, this doesn't sound like a geneticist talking here. Again, I'm not advocating censoring this guy, but again, these are pretty strange remarks which do not sound like they're grounded in any of his scientific background. Maybe they are in his mind.
All right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up there, but I'm sure that debate will continue. Ron, Marcus, Katie, thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Farai.
We've been talking to Marcus Mabry, the international business editor for The New York Times. He joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. Katie Rechdahl, a contributing reporter to the New Orleans Times-Picayune, joined us from AudioWorks in New Orleans. And ABC correspondent Ron Claiborne, he joined us from ABC Radio in New York City.